everybody. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, as always, Ben Thomas. And it's been an interesting month for a company called Southwest Airlines. So we sort of had to call an emergency session of Congress and bring on a couple folks who know a couple things, not only about the world of Southwest Airlines because they're frequent travelers, but also the power of brand equity and the power of customer centricity, not only in the world of airlines, right, which is the catalyst for the conversation, but in our industry as well, right? We live in a world that's so centric around brand equity and influencers and brand trust and identity that no longer can the world of productization continue to thrive in the way that it once did, because now as we all move to sort of a commoditization of the industry, which I don't know that we all want to admit, but things like brand equity are more powerful than they have ever been. So to have this conversation, I brought on a couple folks that I trust mightily who get to live in the world of both the marketing, customer retention, loyalty, and even some of the great product sales and development side of things. So I've got David Venus from Yamaha and Jeff Boges from Checker. Gentlemen, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate you bringing me on, Ben.
Yeah, it's always good, Ben. I appreciate you even taking my word for it, I guess, these days.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what's funny. So we were all kind of going back and forth on LinkedIn, and that's where the idea for the podcast popped up. But, you know, Jeff, it's interesting. You know, when you made your post, obviously you are sort of a fan of Southwest as well. We are here as well, naturally being in Dallas. You brought some really nice perspectives to the table, right? And I want to start there. Talk a little bit about your perspective of the shift and then set the table. We'll dive in from there.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting for me is just like the differentiators, right? Being a product marketer, I'm always looking at like what sets a company apart. And so I got this email yesterday morning, and it threw me off. I knew some changes were coming. I heard about assigned seating, which already was going to be a huge bummer. But I had no idea that they were going to start charging for bags. So when I saw this, it immediately grabbed my attention, because I mean, this is what I felt Southwest was built upon, was just what set them apart. And I feel like I've made this post and a lot of people are resonating with that. And so I'm calling it, am I calling it brand suicide yet? I'm not sure, but, it definitely feels like it. You know, the no change fees, the free check bags, you know, great attitudes. It's just starting to like chip away at all those things that made Southwest what it was. So that's my standpoint. My small intro into how I got into this conversation is just really Southwest, I think, underestimating the emotional loyalty to these things.
And David's got maybe a stronger perspective on it too, especially as somebody who gets to live out in Nashville. Southwest for a lot of musicians was sort of their lifeblood from a check baggage standpoint, because you're traveling with guitars, drums, things like that. And I think, David, what, it's 70% of the airport there?
Yeah. I mean, Southwest is a big part of BNA, right? And, you know, for me, a guy who's really been traveling for 15 years, out of Nashville, and I mean, I would say over the last 15 years, I've flown Southwest probably 400 plus times, you know, and I've done it from the touring side. You know, I came from, you know, I was an audio engineer touring with artists. And that was a big part. That's a big part of why, you know, the musician side or the music industry use Southwest. But I mean, honestly, Jeff, I couldn't agree more. You know, you look at where Southwest stands and what truly made them different. I kind of liken them to what T-Mobile was. They were kind of the uncarrier carrier, right? They were different than everybody else. They didn't want to do what all these legacy carriers were doing. And you know, from being able to change your flight, just paying the difference, you know, that was a big one. The checked bags are huge. And, you know, it's, you know, for families, that's a big deal. I look at it and those are the things that make you truly different. And now you're just everybody else. I might as well as a business traveler who travels now up to 75% of the time, I would always choose Southwest first, right? And I would maybe look, but now, yeah, I am going to look and most likely probably not fly Southwest.
Yeah. I think to David's point, I mean, let's be real. People aren't flying Southwest because it's this luxury of the sky. I think they fly Southwest because it felt like a brand that was on their side. They like They weren't trying to nickel and dime you for seats or bags. There was no hidden fees. So there wasn't, I mean, if you look at that email that came out yesterday, they gave you these, this whole chart. They included a chart in an email, which is like, I was talking to some marketing folks here. It was like, whoa, like who does that? And now you have all of these different pricing packages to look at and what to choose. To David's point, if I'm going to have to, you know, pay for a change fee if I want to. And I just feel like they're throwing it all away, saying, you know, we're now not all in this together. And we're back to this corporate kind of corporate style that we're used to. So,
yeah, one of the most mind-boggling things to me, too, about it all is literally less than a year ago, the CEO comes out and says, don't worry, check bags are going nowhere. Well, it's like, okay, so you just lied to your faithful fan base, right? And that's what it is. You're right. Southwest, you know, their flight attendants were approachable. Their gate agents are approachable. They aren't like the stuffy other legacy carriers that have kind of taken some of that initial air travel, like where everybody used to dress up to get on a plane, no matter where they were going. Right. And I mean, that is so much of what makes Southwest Southwest.
Well, you're right. And it's sort of a, I don't know, it's almost a microcosm of sort of the post-COVID world. Right. And some of it is good, right? Because, hey, some of the efficiencies that we were able to achieve out of COVID have been incredible from a business standpoint. We see that a lot in our industry where things really hit. We've seen a lot of innovation. You've seen a lot of investment in you know, new tools, whether it's cloud, AI, you know, even Southwest going to places like Expedia, I think are a really nice example of that as well. But the interesting thing is that they've so hyper-focused on that, that they've almost ignored really the reason that a lot of folks buy here. It reminds me a lot of sort of the technology industry as well, Jeff, you know, because for a long time, you know, and David, you see this as well, Yamaha, for a long time, brand equity was everything, right? Because there you couldn't get on the internet and you couldn't buy everything on Amazon. And obviously we've seen sort of a commoditization of sorts of that because, hey, now if I need an HDMI cable, I don't have to go to Best Buy. I can have someone bring it to me in an hour. But we're reverting back to this world where brand equity and customer loyalty is becoming more important than ever because now that's the differentiator, right? Why, you know, Jeff, when you look at Southwest kind of abandoning sort of its brand loyalty side of things, why is that sort of mindset also something that is a killer in our world too?
Yeah, I think it comes down to really blurring your brand identity is like what I like to call it is. So I think Southwest is trying to still, if you kind of break down that email and what they're trying to do, it's like A-listers still have all of these benefits, right? But at the A-list level. And so I think it comes down to you're really blurring it, which is a big no-no, I think, in from a marketing perspective. You know, it makes your customer ask this question, which I think we all are asking is, why should I stay? And if the answer is because we're still kind of cheap, I mean, that's not enough. I think every brand needs crystal clear clarity when it comes to, you know, what sets you apart. And that gives you the equity to be who you are. It gives customers the trust. I think this type of crystal clear positioning is so critical. And when it comes to Southwest, and this is the kind of case study we're talking about, but you can apply this across all industries, you know, hardware, software, SaaS, UCaaS, CCaaS, CX, all the acronyms, right? But, you know, for the purposes of this conversation, if I'm asking Southwest, what are you? Are you a budget airline? Then act like it. Are you a customer first airline? Then prove it. You know, if you're just trying to blend in like everyone else, because, you know, this is beneficial to you, all equity is lost with the customer. And so I think when a brand loses focus, it starts making decisions based on what the competition is doing outside of what has made them successful in the first place.
Well, it's a million times harder to gain that trust than it is to lose it. You know, it's interesting too, David. I mean, obviously getting the chance to work at Yamaha, really one of the most trusted brands across probably every single industry that you could think of, from, you know, marine to, you know, motocross, all the way to the pro AV and music side of things. It's really difficult to build that reputation, you know, but I want to ask, I mean, for you guys, obviously it's one of the drivers of revenue, right? Folks trust the brand, folks really embrace the idea that the products that they're going to get from you not only work, but are high quality. Why is that so important for you?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I mean, you're working for a company like Yamaha. It's funny. I often get, you know, the jokes. It's like, you know, I've been, you know, I found my brand new boat, but, you know, I've been looking for a piano. And it's like, you'll never believe it, but I've got you, right? I mean, Yamaha does look heavily at its brand health, right? And the value that the brand brings to the overarching, you know, thing, which is us obviously, you know, selling product. You know, Yamaha's known for quality. We're known for making, you know, really great product that, you know, we pump a lot of dollars into R&D to be at the forefront of, you know, technology and, you know, put great product kind of into the market. But, you know, you can easily devalue that by one misstep. And I think that's what's happening here. And not only one misstep, but Southwest has made multiple missteps. I mean, you even look at the devaluation of their points earnings that they're, you know, doing, going from 6 to 2, devaluing now basically, I mean, credit card holders to nothing. You know, yeah, cool. Credit card holders get free bags. I have the credit card, right? But, you know, from a personal standpoint, but I still have to pay for the bag and they're going to reimburse me. Cool. So I spend money for you to give it back. And, you know, for them to have a balance sheet that maybe looks healthier to a bunch of investors. And I think that's what they're playing to at this point. But yeah, brand health is so important. And you can make one misstep and completely derail it. And personally, just all of the different things you've seen happen in less than a year, basically, because I think it was July timeframe when they made that first announcement about going to the assigned seating. And I know not the entire plane will be assigned seating, but you're starting to blur the lines and blend in to be everybody else. And I don't think Southwest knows who they want to be anymore. Do they want to have, are they doing the assigned seating and comfort seating and things like that to appeal to more business style travelers? Okay, fine. But I don't know if that's necessarily the right call, because I can get that on other airlines, right? Obviously, I've chosen Southwest personally for, A, I can get anywhere I want direct because I live in a big market for, you know, Southwest. So maybe I'm the exception, not the rule there. But yeah, I didn't have to worry about bags. You know, I've got points galore. I'm worried now when you look at everything that they've started to take away and change. What's next in the chopping block? I'm calling it. It's companion pass.
It's going to be companion pass for sure. Well, and it's crazy because I think, you know, the response is sort of one thing, right? Everybody's upset. Naturally, hey, there's a transitional period, right? But what they've done, and this is really where that crossover happens for me, what they've done is they've isolated individual super fan groups, right? Super fan groups, community members, and in our industry, in the B2B side of things, it's channel partners, vendors, end users. They've fully just respectfully kind of thrown the middle finger to them. It's challenging because whether it's the musicians, right, who are purists for Southwest, or families like myself who love it because you could travel with, you know, strollers, and you could travel with car seats and baggage. You don't have to worry about all that stuff. But it's interesting because they've neglected their community as part of it too. And Jeff, you've gotten a chance to see, even in the world of sort of the AV side, both in the Logitech days and RingCentral and beyond, that the lifeblood of our businesses are those communities. Talk a little bit about that and talk about sort of, you know, that perspective of things.
Yeah, I think you're hitting the nail on the head I don't want to say cult-like, but Southwest people love their Southwest. It is this community of people, and I'm a part of it, right? And I feel like they set themselves up for an awkward transition, if you will. I think the best example that I can tie this to is Peloton. So Peloton has this huge cult following. Then all of a sudden they made it too expensive and too exclusive for their own good. And it was a bomb. And I think similarly, Southwest has made that mistake. And look, I get it. Airline business is brutal. Costs are rising. Investors are breathing down your necks. But I think here's what Southwest could have done with that community in mind. I think they tried to attempt this with that chart, but introduce some type of tiered benefits. So instead of just axing free bags, what would it look like to create this loyalty-based system? And I think that's what they're trying to say is, if you're an A-list member, but that doesn't necessarily work when I'm a family of four and my kids don't fly that often, right? So how could they have introduced some type of incentive where black bags still could fly free with like a BOGO deal, buy one, get one free, things that would benefit this, their type of audience and community that was flying. I think they could have really done a great job of reframing the message to that type of community. Again, looking at their customers and who these people are. I had someone comment on my LinkedIn post who's a traveling mom with three kids. What does this look like now for her kids who have to pay for those bags, right? It becomes really expensive, and something that she was able to do that was a huge advantage for her with flying with her children now becomes more burdensome, right? So they could have done a job about shifting the narrative, right? When you're a community-based brand that has a huge following that love you for who you are, speak to your community, talk to them, get on their level. And I think the last point here, when you have a following like this, is you want to add value and not take it away. So instead of just giving that type of announcement where it felt like everything was being stripped, what type of narrative could have been included, like faster boarding times, or because of this, this is the result and what you will benefit from. I think understanding this is all comes back down to true core PMM work is buyer personas. Who are you talking to? How is this going to resonate with your audience? And yeah, I think when it comes to the type of brands we're used to that have great following, like Yamaha too, I know a ton of like folks who are all in on Yamaha. I'm sure there's a certain approach where you value the type of narrative that is a community-based, speaking to probably your top individuals. I think you can't just throw that out the window when you start on, you know, changing things for what's going to make, you know, more dollars to David's point, if you will, right?
You know, David, you do get to live on the revenue side of the business, right? And a lot of these things pop up, whether it's sunsetting products, whether it's saying, hey, we're transitioning this benefit for this benefit. There is some natural transition that folks are used to. I want to ask, because you get to live on the sales and revenue side of the business, what sorts of transitions maybe are more normal, and what transitions maybe that Southwest has done, and you know, even folks in the industry, what are some of those transitions where it becomes a point of, hey, You're not shedding, you know, dollars and overhead expenses. You're shedding clients, maybe on purpose in some cases, right? But talk about the importance of, hey, there's some natural change that has to happen from a revenue standpoint, but where's that line?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, at the end of the day, being in sales, and I mean, I've been on the marketing side, so I understand both. You know, I think I fully understand the true customer journey, how somebody becomes a brand believer, and then they end up buying, and kind of all the things that are tied in that. I mean, the sales process is obviously a little tricky. I mean, for me, and I mean, something that, you know, Yamaha stands firmly in place on is, integrity and trust, right? I mean, with integrity, you build trust and you build believers, right? That is a huge part of that. I mean, people are buying you just as much as they are a brand. So, I don't know if any of you or either of you have seen or heard the How I Built This podcast with Herb Kelleher, right? The original founder of, you know, Southwest. I mean, it's a fascinating interview, and just understand, I mean, one of the biggest things that Herb called out in that podcast, and one of the things that always stuck with me, is like, you know, be trustworthy. I mean, that was one of the things he tried to cultivate every day. And this is a complete deviation from that, right? You are doing nothing but stripping the brand of, I guess, stripping away all the things that people have always loved about Southwest. I mean, that'd be like Yamaha saying, we're no longer making music, like, or providing things to help you make music. People would be like, wait, what? That makes no sense.
So, David, I've got to play a little bit of devil's advocate here, right? Because in theory, that's all good, right? But at some point, there's got to be attributable revenue to that community side of things, right? And the attribution piece, especially in 2025, can get a little dicey, right? Because, you know, you look at it, marketing, sort of the standard is 11 different touch points across 7 different channels. You know, you can't always say that this one marketing social post that I put out did this, or, hey, this community initiative that I did, you know, resulted in this. How do you take that community piece and start to find ways to attribute that direct revenue to it? Because I don't think Southwest have a hard problem doing that. But how do you sort of as a manufacturer kind of find that balance?
I don't know if this really answers the question, but the first thing that comes to mind for me is, I mean, you are a sum of all your parts, right? I mean, you have to be good at all of the things to truly be a differentiating brand, right? And be able to sell your product confidently. And for me, I mean, that obviously starts in sales. It's, you know, and I think the quality relationship, and this is something Ben, you and I have always talked about, between marketing and sales and making sure you're in alignment on those two things. Because you can have sales guys out there pushing. But if you're not in alignment with what the, you know, brand is trying to accomplish and what you're trying to do there and the, you know, the logistical side of the company that people often forget. Yes, it is about a revenue number, right? I mean, you know, look, they are constantly asking for more. Every company is going to ask for that, especially when they're publicly traded, just like Southwest is, just like Yamaha is in Japan, right? But you have to look at the whole picture, and it's a sum of all the parts, and you are only as good as the weakest one. Unfortunately, I think the loudest voice at the table for Southwest is their marketing arm, right? Their social reach is huge. They're a massive, I don't want to call it a fanboy, fangirl type brand, but they are. They're not Apple, but of the airlines, I would say they're at the top of that style, right?
Well, it's interesting too. And, you know, you sort of talk about the sum of all parts and, you know, it's been cool to see how, you know, brands like Southwest and, you know, you mentioned T-Mobile earlier, have influenced the world, obviously, not only of just even B2C, but B2B as well. And Jeff, I want to ask, I guarantee you there's folks who are watching this right now saying, hey, Southwest, bummer, crazy. And then we'll literally go do the same thing in 5 minutes to their, you know, reseller community, not even making that attribution. What are the takeaways that B2B can pull from this, right? What are some of the things where, you know, that marketer who's pissed off about, you know, Southwest changing their baggage flights, who doesn't see the cognitive dissonance that they're doing the same thing to their community? What are the takeaways that they could pull from this?
Yeah, that's really good. It's a really good question. I think it's just thinking on three things. I think as a marketer, we're going to make these kinds of mistakes, thinking we have every best intention. I'm sure Southwest didn't just drop an email, or whoever sent this out didn't think, okay, tomorrow I'm just going to make this announcement. I'm sure there were, I mean, really great professionals in their space, very well thought out, from investors to product people, to a pricing team, to legal, to marketers, all in a room saying, hey, this is our change. So I'm having remorse coming off so strong on Southwest, but I think that's the difficult part, is you have all of these different minds coming into a room. And so I think the biggest advice and the takeaway I can give is, don't forget about the community, right? At the heart of that meeting should have been, okay, at the end of the day, we've kind of got through all of these different walls of different stakeholders that appease everyone. Now let's re-review it from our customers' eyes. How are they going to perceive and digest this information? And I'm not saying that wasn't done, but if at the end of the day that's still missing the mark, you have to reframe the message and go back into that war room. I think with that being said, the takeaway too is, okay, well, if this does happen and I get the type of response that Southwest is probably getting from their customers, is how do I fix it? You mentioned it earlier. I think you have to rebuild that trust, which is really hard to do after the damage is done, but build the trust, come back and respond, over communicate the why immediately. Like if there is no push on, you know, how this is going to be, over communicate the why, you know, sell that story of why you made these decisions in the first place, and then reposition smartly. I think in the framework that I use, it's always evaluating post-launch. So in this post-launch for Southwest, we're reevaluating, and yeah, they've got to make a hard pivot to reposition this narrative to win back that community. So I think those are some real takeaways, because yes, it happens in every industry, and yes, I'm going to make the mistake, and there are folks out there that are going to go and do the same thing tomorrow without even realizing it. So
yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting is in a post-COVID world, we've realized the power of community, right? Whether for some of us, it's at our houses of worship or our, you know, community groups, you know, or hobby groups and things like that. You know, and David, it's been cool to see in our industry too, that was very, very product central for a long, long time and very technologically driven and speeds and feeds and things like that, where brands have said, hey, you know what? It's important for us to have a meaningful relationship with our community, even just outside of resellers, right? It's easy to point to the resellers. But talk about some of the ways, or maybe even some of the things that folks like, you know, even Yamaha can pull from this and say, hey, this shows us the power of our community, and it shows us why we need to continue to keep our community engaged.
Yeah, Yamaha just launched a brand new, basically brand promise to be heard, right? I mean, you know, as a musician, that's a, you know, a big thing, you know, but the most musicians just want their art to be heard. And I mean, I think that speaks true to anybody though, right? I mean, no one likes to kind of be buried in, well, maybe some people do, but you know, most people want to be heard or have something that is worth hearing. And Yamaha does try to get really close to the customer, right? I mean, yeah, obviously, you know, our channel partners and reseller network are really important to that. But, you know, we have to have strong messaging internally for us. But then also we have to make sure that that's being lived and breathed by our channel partners. But we also try to get really close to the end users, right? We do things like NAMM. We go to, TwitchCon, these types of shows where the end user is the most important part of this, right? Because at the end of the day, they're who's going to drive the ask for our product. It's that simple. You know, you want your customers going and asking, hey, I want this Yamaha product. Why is it not on your shelf? Or, hey, I want this mixer, right? In a B2B world, this is what I want. I need you to help me figure out how to make it work for my scenario, right? And, but I mean, community is driven at its core. It takes everybody, but at the end of the day, the business needs to understand that you're only as strong as the community you're building around the product or brand or whatever you're trying to push out there, right? And I think that's what truly differentiates companies that succeed long term and falter in the short term.
Yeah, I agree 100%, David. I feel like in my experience, customers who engage in community actually convert faster than those who don't. We saw things where we get higher retention. So actually, customers who are engaging in these types of communities that sounds like what you're describing, they actually are proven to stay longer and expand their contracts. So they're coming to us like, okay, contract is coming. You know, we don't have to do that reach out just because of the type of community involvement had. They become brand loyalists. And so Ben, you were asking earlier, like, what are those like returns on investment for community? I mean, there are things that can be measured with pure data, but also you got to dive a little deeper and ask the type of questions. Look at these types of customers, do some cross evaluation on, you know, customer name and finding them in the communities and look at their, you know, how they converted, how long they've been a customer, even the cost of acquisition, right? Some of these could have came in from a link off of LinkedIn. Like that's a super low acquisition cost. So I think community is huge, man. I have nothing but great things to say about it. And I think this generation that's coming behind us, we're seeing more of this, like these Gen Zers who are becoming these corporate influencers, creating community-based, circles amongst them from an employee to a customer. I think this is the future of marketing. And so such a great, great conversation. And you're bringing up points that are just hitting some good sparks in me. And so David was talking to me and I was like getting fired up over here.
It's interesting because the world of B2C and B2B have never been closer from a marketing standpoint. You know, you look at, what happened in B2C and the Taylor Swifts of the world and the Dallas Cowboys of the world who say, hey, our fans are our best marketers. Let's empower them and give them all the tools they need. Historically in B2B, it's been a little bit different, but that idea has shifted dramatically, which is why it's so important for us to have conversations like this about those brands and what we could pull from. I'll tell you, gentlemen, I'll give you a last question. If there was one thing, I'm gonna start with you, David. If there was one thing that you would say to Southwest, maybe that they could help do to take a first step to remediate the situation with folks like us, what would it be? I'm putting you on the spot. We didn't prep this, but I got to ask.
Yeah. Remember how you got here. I mean, that is a big part of it. Obviously, you can't sit in the past forever, but remember how you got here. Remember why you do business. Customers are important, and you don't have a business without them. They're not always right. Not always, but you have to take their thoughts into consideration, because without them, you're going to have a tough road to, or I guess a tough ladder to climb. But
Jeff, same question to you. We'll wrap it up.
Yeah, I'm 100% with David on that. I'm an integrity person, so I think Southwest should just publicly acknowledge the frustration, come out and say that they're working towards being the brand that we all love, and they're, you know, these changes are inevitable, but talk about things that, you know, could help rebuild the trust. And I think honesty is first. I don't know. I would say for Southwest to go look at, okay, you know, that we're going to have to charge for bags. There's an expense there, but what could be some other things that can give away that can kind of offset? Is it free Wi-Fi? Is it, you know, discounted fares for children? Giving some incentive to earn that dollar, but also give back that dollar to the customer.
Well, look, if Southwest is listening, they're about 5 blocks down the street. I don't know, probably more than 5, but they're 2 or 3 miles away. But, you talked about where Herb Kelleher came up with the idea for Southwest. That's actually about 5 blocks up the street from us. So very large attachment with us here in Dallas as well. You guys obviously not Dallas-based, but get to see the impact of how great Texas is indirectly. But I'll tell you what, gentlemen, it's always fantastic to have you on the show. I appreciate you sharing your insights. We got to have you back on soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ben.
Appreciate it, Ben.
And thank you all for tuning in. Be sure to like and subscribe. Check us out next time on the show.